Kathy.
The most trusted and longest-running sports talk show in Tennessee. From the Budweiser studios of Cumulus Broadcasting, this is Sports Talk with John Wilkerson and Jimmy Hines on Sports Radio WNML.
Welcome to Sports Talk on this Wednesday afternoon with Jimmy Hyams. I'm John Wilkerson. A lot coming your way today as we're with you until 7 o'clock. We are going to, of course, on this being kind of a double game day for the University of Tennessee. You are slated for a first pitch between Tennessee and UNC Asheville in less than 55 minutes at Lindsey Nelson Stadium. The game time moved from 4:30 to 4 o'clock as they hope to get this in ahead of what, Jimmy, looks to be a very wet afternoon and cooling conditions.
Yeah, and certainly it rained earlier, so we'll see if they're able to get that in. Sometimes the forecasts are accurate, sometimes they're not. So we'll see what happens.
And then tonight, it's Tennessee basketball. As the Volunteers, you get used to playing on Tuesdays, and then they throw in another Wednesday game. But at Arkansas, it is an 8:30 tip, and that means coverage starts at 8 o'clock. So it'll be Sports Talk to 7, the starting 11, with Will West from 7 until 8, and then Vol Network coverage. Big opportunity for Tennessee. They have a chance to finish off a season sweep against Arkansas, but the Razorbacks a healthier team than when it arrived here in Knoxville.
Yeah, Isaiah Joe's a really good basketball player. He didn't play against Tennessee earlier. He's been out for five games. His first game back, he had 21 points and hit five threes. That's how good he can be. He averages over 16 points. Their best player is Mason Jones. He has had two 40-point games this year. And that's a rarity. And in fact, there are only three players in the country that have had multiple 40-point games, and Jones is one of those. It's is also interesting, too. Not only is Arkansas 10-4 against Tennessee in Fayetteville, the last win for Tennessee at Arkansas, 2009.
Been a little while.
Has been a while, yep.
It is interesting in this rivalry, this series, that each team has won on the other's home floor exactly four times.
Yeah. Yeah, so It's a big game for Tennessee to right the ship. You had that chance to win at Auburn. You blew a 17-point lead. Is it going to be more difficult to bounce back from that than some of your other losses? I guess time will tell. I do think Tennessee has the pieces in place to win a game on the road like that, but they have to have, I think, at least four of their five starters play well. They can't do like they did at Auburn where you didn't get much out of Fulkerson. Vescovi played 18 minutes. You had some a great performance by Bowden, but some of the other pieces were not in place to help Tennessee win that. I think four out of five starters, or at least four players, somebody off the bench, I guess you could count, has to play well for Tennessee to win at Arkansas.
That they do. And again, Tennessee did so much to build a lead at Auburn, but then just saw it kind of all dissipate, evaporate, and fall apart.
Auburn was right for the taking, too. They weren't shooting well from three. They didn't have Okoro. They're down 17. They're a little bit discombobulated. I'll give Auburn credit for this. They hit five of the last seven threes, so that's pretty clutch shooting. Cambridge hit three of them. I think Dowdy hit a couple of them, but Tennessee just had too many turnovers. Some were forced. Some were unforced. Some were just, well, I'll use the word Rick Barnes used, ridiculous.
Mm-hmm.
And so they let one slip away, and you know, we've talked a little bit about how, God, if they'd have pulled that out, if they'd have beat A&M at home, if they'd have beat South Carolina when they had a lead, how much different it would look. But I'll say this. There are probably a lot of other teams in the SEC that might be able to say something similar about, yeah, it. Oh, this one, that one got away. So
very much so.
Yeah, but from Tennessee's perspective, this is a team that very easily could have 18 wins. And, 19 if you give them the Memphis game where they only scored, 47 points. So they've let a few slip away, and that's why they're in the position they are.
That is true, and we'll see what they can get done tonight in Fayetteville.
And we'll go ahead and get to our news and notes brought to you by Image Matters, technology you need, people you can trust. Some more on the Vols. Not only has Eve Pons blocked a shot in all 27 games, Santiago Vescovi's hit a three in all 15 games he has played. Tennessee is number one in the SEC and SEC games only as far as points allowed, 65.5. And in block shots, 6.1 per game. All right, a few other notes that are out there. Duke falls to Wake Forest, the second time in a week that the Blue Devils have lost to an unranked team. Wake Forest, 12-13, wins 113-101 in two overtimes. Duke now 23-5, How hard is it for teams to keep a lead? Well, Wake Forest outscored Duke 10-1 in the final 75 seconds to force that overtime.
Goodness.
So Duke wasn't able to hold a lead, and that's a pretty good team with a pretty good coach. North Carolina gets off the deck. They beat NC State 85-79, had a pretty solid game right there for them. Joe Burrow said he'd play for any team, and that includes Cincinnati, but he said, hey, he didn't want to be presumptuous. He's not so sure Cincinnati will take him number one. Let's get to a couple of notes about Tennessee, local notes. Tennessee baseball beating Northern Kentucky 15-1. Five runs were walked in the third inning. Christian Della Schmidt, is that how you say his name?
Mm-hmm.
Had a nice outing. John, you've seen these pitchers pitch. Which ones so far have impressed you the most?
I would start, I would look at the young man who gets the ball first today in Jackson Leith and Chad Dallas. And that's not to say anything counter to what Sean Hundley's done out of the bullpen. Chase Wallace has done with his first two starts. I just think that you've had a number of guys. Redmond Walsh just got his first save. So I think the staff is off to a good start.
Bullpen gave up only one run in 4 1/3 innings. Pete Durkay and Landon Gray had home runs. Tennessee scored in the first or second inning for the eighth game in a row. So they continue to keep that streak alive. 11 hits, 11 bases on balls they had yesterday. The softball team, so they haven't had the greatest of starts. They're 8-6. They defeated UT Martin 3-2. 100 wins in a row against in-state opponents. When Joan Crone, the women's athletic director, interviewed the Weekly some 19 years ago, she said she basically wanted them to do two things. She wanted them to dominate the state in recruiting and beat in-state opponents. Well, the Weeklies have done that. I don't know how much better you get than 100-0 against in-state opponents. The Lady Vols have been hurt in softball by the fact that they lost their three best pitchers from last year. Well, so far, because Ashley Rogers has not pitched. She's got a stress fracture. And then Arnold transferred to Florida State. Maddie Moss completed her career. So Tennessee without its three best pitchers from a year ago. Another person who could pitch, first baseman Ashley Morgan, is out with a head injury. So that's another potential pitcher that Tennessee doesn't have. But they get the win. It was in walk-off fashion. That didn't come easy. Chelsea Seagram with a walk-off double, bottom of the seventh inning to score Kiki Malloy. Callie Turner is now 6-4. Her first win in Knoxville. All right, a few other notes. Let's go with the SEC in basketball. Kentucky beating A&M 69-60. Kentucky's won 8 in a row. John, their best player is a guy that I wouldn't have bet on before the year. I thought they had at least three players better than Emmanuel Quickley.
Mm-hmm.
30 points last night, 8 of 12 on threes. And he has averaged over 27 points in his last two games. Auburn beating Ole Miss 67-58, 19 straight home wins for the Tigers. As Austin Wiley had 15 points, 11 rebounds. And Okora did play. Didn't put up big numbers, but he did play. Mississippi State beating Alabama 80-73, as Reggie Perry had 21 points, 12 rebounds. Mississippi State shot 52.6%. Alabama 38.6. That's your difference in your ball game. All right, a few other notes out there. Georgia defensive lineman Devontae Wyatt arrested for misdemeanor charges on criminal trespassing and property damage. He is a junior college player, one of only three senior defensive linemen on the team. A couple other basketball notes. San Diego State rallied from 6 down to beat Colorado State. San Diego State had won 26 in a row, then lost, and then they were on the verge of losing again, but they found a way to pull it out. So a good win for them. All right, I looked at this, and I thought this was kind of interesting. So Heisman dark horses. Alabama receiver Jalen Waddle, he's 100-1 to win it. Iowa State quarterback Brock Purdy, 60-1. Kyle Trask, Florida quarterback, 60-1. You got running back C.J. Verdell from Oregon is 60-1. John Reese Plumlee, Ole Miss quarterback, 100-1. Randall Moore, receiver, Purdue, 100-1. I guess they are long shots if they're that far down the list. The IOC is going to give itself 3 months to decide whether or not they're going to hold the Olympics in Tokyo, Japan, due to the coronavirus. So they've said that moving to another city is unlikely. Postponing it is unlikely. Well, if that's the case, then you're going to have it in Tokyo or not have it at all. That's what it looks like.
Yeah. Where else could you just drop in the Olympic Village, the housing for all of the athletes, and know that the facilities and everything are ready to go?
So the Olympics start July the 24th. They're going to have to make a decision by the 1st of May as to whether they're going to play. As far as a couple other notes, Ryan Day, Ohio State coach, gets a three-year extension. He goes from making $4.5 million to $6 million, then the next year $6.5 million, then the next year $7.6 million. Really? You're going to give him those kind of raises and you don't know what he's going to be doing after those after this season? I thought that was pretty interesting there. All right, a couple of other notes out there. The NFL reps, the executive committee, had voted Friday 6-5 against the proposal. I don't know why they took another vote, but I just read where they voted 7-4 against it now. But it's going to the players, and they're going to vote, and ESPN has reported that vote will occur no later than Friday. So we may have a decision on what the players decide. If they reject it, of course, they've got a lot of time still to reach a compromise because the collective bargaining agreement is still in place for this year. So we'll see. Meant to mention this earlier with the Lady Vols. Kemmer Harris has been selected as the Lady Vols representative on the SEC Community Service Team. So congratulations to her for that. Tennis star Maria Sharapova retiring after 19 years. She's got Hall of Fame credentials. Really disappointed that she got caught cheating and had to be suspended. And she basically was cheating, taking PEDs. It was reported without telling her trainers. Not a fan of that.
Not a wise choice.
No, no, it wasn't. As far as Tennessee soccer, Tennessee midfielder Isabel Cook is on the USA under-19 national team. They will be playing in Spain next week. There are three international matches that the USA team will play. It is a 12-team friendly. The goalkeeper, Lindsay Romig, also was invited. She's with the Lady Vols, but she is unable to play due to off-season surgery. As far as a couple of notes in the NBA, OKC wins 9 in a row. They beat the Bulls. Kobe White, a product of North Carolina, had 35 points. He is now the second Bull in rookie in history to have three games in a row with at least 30 points. You might have guessed Michael Jordan being the other one. The Lakers beat the Pelicans 118-109. LeBron with a season high 40 points. When he scores at least 30 points, the Lakers are 18-0. Zion Williamson had 29 points, 13 of 19 on free throws. He is the second teenager in NBA history to have at least 19 free throws in a game. The other, LeBron James. Jay Williams with ESPN said he thinks New Orleans has enough talent to make the playoffs and that they have the easiest schedule the rest of the way, so he thinks they got a shot at it. Milwaukee Bucks are 50-8. They defeated Toronto. They have the seventh team to have 50 wins in their first 58 games. The other six made the NBA Finals. Five of those won the NBA. Also, Milwaukee 8-0 in back-to-back games this year, back-to-back nights. And they've had 82 straight games with at least 100 points. That is third all-time. And Milwaukee ranks number one in the NBA in offense and defense. I don't know if that's points or efficiency. I'm not sure which one it was, but I read that note about them, which I thought was pretty impressive. Tim Tebow hits a home run, Mets spring training. Still don't think there's much chance of him making the team, do you?
No.
And he's got to be in his 30s. 31, maybe?
Yeah.
Something like that?
I'd say so.
So we'll see what transpires with him. SEC basketball tonight, Georgia at South Carolina, Missouri at Vanderbilt, LSU at Florida. The LSU-Florida game, the most compelling of those matchups. And congratulations to Fulton. They beat Alcoa. They win District 4AA. They will be hosting Northview Academy Saturday night in the first round in a game played at Fulton. Oh, and then NFL Combine. So who's represented? The SEC has 93 players at the Combine. The Big Ten, 57. Pac-12, 47. ACC, 35. Big 12, 29. So I thought that was an interesting look at that.
So you have almost twice as many as the Pac-12 and more than twice as many of every other Power Five with the exception of the Big Ten.
Correct.
Wow.
And you still had 36 more than the Big Ten.
Yeah.
So that's just remarkable what they do. Quick look at the NCAA women's RPI. So the updated look at it, Tennessee is 55 in the women's RPI, and in the men's net, the Vols are 65th. That's ninth among SEC teams. And Tennessee, which went into the year with a long home winning streak, has lost five games at home. The teams that beat them were Memphis, Wisconsin, Kentucky, A&M, and LSU. four of those five pretty good teams. Mm-hmm. That A&M game was just, boy, that's just one you just can't let get away.
No.
And if you feel like your team is not a very good basketball school this year, and you're Ole Miss, you're right. Ole Miss women's RPI 287, men's RPI for Ole Miss 94. That's a combined 391. That is by far the worst of anybody in the SEC. Nobody's close. The best in that category is Kentucky. The men and women, their combined mark in that regard is at 40. That's the best in the league. Tennessee's at 120.
That's Jimmy Himes. I'm John Wilkerson. A lot coming your way today. To join us, 656-9900, 656-9900. That puts you on 99.1, the sports animal.
Not so much our job as it is our obsession. 99.1, the sports animal.
Sports Talk continues with Jimmy Himes. I'm John Wilkerson.
Tennessee men's basketball team not where it wants to be, of course, and we've talked about how they've let some games slip away. Associate head coach Mike Swartz recently was at the Big Orange Tip-Off Club, and he said that this team kind of reminds him of the Tennessee team 3 years ago that had trouble getting over the hump against several teams, including North Carolina. Here's Coach Swartz.
We liken this season a lot to 3 seasons ago when all those guys were sophomores. Admiral Schofield, Grant Williams, Jordan Bone, Kyla. When that group was sophomores, it felt very same. We went into Chapel Hill and we lost. We led for 39 minutes of that game and we lost. We played Oregon, who was the number 4 ranked team in the country, in Maui. We led for the whole game. A player that's in the NBA right now, Dylan Brooks, hits a shot at the end of regulation. We go to overtime. We lose in overtime in that game. We had a number of close games in the SEC that year. So, but the positive thing is that season, we were on the bubble going into February. And we finished the season 2-7, and it really pushed us off the bubble. We ended up losing to Georgia in the first round of the SEC tournament in Nashville. The thing that we're looking at this year, we still feel like we have an opportunity that we're still playing our best basketball going that way. So that's a positive. We know we got to take care of the ball better. All the guys they're very optimistic. It was a down locker room, honestly, last night after even with the win, just because of how that last minute went of the game. And that, you know what, that's what you want. The guys were disappointed. They knew we shouldn't have turned the ball over 3 times in a minute and 38 seconds and given Vanderbilt a chance to go from a 13-point lead down to a 2-point lead in the last 2 minutes of the game. And that was, but we're going to fix it, and the guys are very diligent about it, and they understand when they come in and watch film today and we get at practice tomorrow that they know what we have to do to get better. So
Schwartzer's asked, what do the numbers mean that you hold up during games?
Those numbers, what we did was we put a numbering system on our defense, which just basically allows us to change defense on the fly. Okay. And make changes, adjustments, possession to possession. Obviously, it's easy out of a timeout or when there's a stoppage in play and they substitute and we're going to change our coverages. But with this year, and it really happened from the Purdue game last year, we felt like there were times we wanted to be able to adjust our coverage based on the ways the game was going. And in that arena in Louisville last year, which was just a dynamic atmosphere, it was so loud, it was difficult to make those changes. So this summer we started a system where it just gives us a little bit more flexibility to be able to do that. And that's what that is. And whether that's with the clock running down or substitution patterns by the opponent, it just allows us to
make. So who calls that defense in? Do you do that or is it coach?
Yeah, as a coaching staff, we're commuting in there, and then I just happen to have the card.
What do the players do to improve their game outside of practice?
I would venture to say this, and I'd be real confident saying this in this room, there's not another team in the country that puts more time in the gym outside of practice than our guys. And I would say that with absolute confidence. And what our guys do coming in the gym, whether it be working on fundamentals, shooting, free throws, they're in there consistently. The difficult thing that comes this time of year when you have a team that has gone through what we've gone through, injury-wise, addition, subtractions, is we don't have great depth. We have great youth without great depth. And so when it comes to that, now you've got John Fulkerson playing 38 minutes in a game, and that's not what his body is meant to do right now. And you have 38, 39 minutes. That's when turnovers happen like that at the end of the game. And I don't believe we've had inconsistency at the point guard spot. I think we've had some turnovers at that spot. I think the play that Santiago has brought has been incredible. His ability to drive the basketball and get Epon's good shots and create shots for guys has been as good as anybody this season, including when Lamonte was here. Lamonte brought a different element because of how what he could do shooting the ball, the gene he had in the last 4 or 5 minutes of a game that he showed over his career. Right now, that is something we don't have. So I'm not sure we would say we've been inconsistent at the point guard spot. We've been really happy with Santi, really happy with Josiah. But there is a learning curve for two freshmen in the SEC to be taking a team that had a senior veteran point guard that was a fifth-year senior to now say, hey, we're going to help lead this thing down the stretch. And ball security has been the one area. We have no problem with the execution of the offense, the shots we're getting. We have no problem with the way he's shooting the ball. Nobody would think it. Josiah James is our leading three-point shooter in the SEC. And coming in here, he was known as someone who couldn't shoot the ball. So he's shooting 40-plus percent from behind the arc. It has strictly been one area from that spot that we know we have to be better, and they're working diligently at it.
That's Tennessee Associate Head Coach Michael Schwartz.
That's Jimmy Hyams. I'm John Wilkerson. When we return, we'll catch up with our own Vince Ferrara ahead of his call today at 4 o'clock on UTSports.com and the UT Game Day app of Tennessee and UNC Asheville. This is Sports Talk on 99.1 The Sports Animal. Sports Talk rolls on with Jimmy Hyams. I'm John Wilkerson, and joining us from Lindsey Nelson Stadium ahead of his call today for Tennessee and UNC Asheville, which you can hear on UTSports.com and the UT Game Day app, is the one, the only Vince Ferrara. Vince, how are you?
I am good, gentlemen. A little light rain, but that doesn't faze Lindsey Nelson Stadium with this fine turf, so I think we're on schedule, ready to go.
Yeah, not so far. It hasn't phased anything. And if for those in attendance, it looks like they're going to get another peek at Jackson Leith.
That's right, Mr. 20 strikeouts in 9 innings of work this season. He is exciting, boy. Coming over.
That's from Roger Clemens.
That's right. He's a serious talent, and 2 appearances, and obviously, you know, as you know, John pitched on Sunday and helped close things out for Tennessee and got his second win, mm-hmm. and you know, a start and a relief appearance. So, you know, just great performance for Tennessee out of the pen and when he started. Really impressive what we've seen from Jackson Leith to this point.
Yeah, and of course you had the call yesterday in which Tennessee proved that patience is indeed a virtue as they, we'll just say it, the Norse walked the Tennessee team bus.
That's right, and it was just a parade. It was like one of the cartoons where they just move station to station constantly. That's the way it went down, and 5 bases loaded walks. I don't recall ever seeing that. John, can you recall anything like that? 5 bases loaded walks, and 8 walks in an inning may have been done, but 5 bases loaded walks is a lot.
No doubt. And when you think about it, they almost walked every man in the batting order yesterday in that inning.
Right.
So, I think I did that.
Yeah, until they called 12. Lee Smith out of the bullpen to take Hines out.
That was my last pitching effort. Vince, it looks like, I know it's early, but it looks like this is a pretty deep pitching staff.
It is. All the guys that we saw yesterday pitch for Tennessee didn't even get an opportunity to pitch over the weekend in Round Rock, and all of them performed well. Christian Delishman, a very talented arm, he went 4 2/3 scoreless. He looked very comfortable. Then Will Mabry, Ethan Anderson, two-way player, he gave up the only run on a solo home run, but then he was unfazed after that. And I think that's a nice little test for a young pitcher. You give up a blast, and then you come right back, and you're setting people down. I think he retired 4 straight after that. And then Kirby Cannell, a guy that, you know, has ability, he's competitive, and he came back from a car accident, and he's recovered well. They really like him. There's just so many numbers right now, but it just shows that the recruiting of Tony Vitello and this staff is starting to pay off, because I remember hearing Coach Vitello with you guys last year, and you're asking him about all these, you know, the pitchers and the players, significant players from last year's squad that helped get Tennessee back to the NCAA tournament. And he obviously is so grateful for what those players did for the program and helping them go in the right direction. But even then, to me, I could sense a quiet confidence that he knew the potential of what he had coming in. And so far, with the competition that they have among all those pitchers, guys trying to find a spot, find a role, and having everything be up in the air. And we pretty much penciled in Garrett Crochet as the Friday night starter for this team. We hadn't been able to pitch yet. Told you guys the other day that Coach Vitello did that we're looking at probably SEC play for Crochet. So now here's an opportunity for Chad Dallas, who's pitched well in Friday to Friday starts so far. And now there's the opportunity, like a Christian Delishman who pitched last night. He's a potential starter for this team. You got to keep performing. You got to take advantage of your opportunities. And you have a chance to move up and then get on the mound. And I think in all positions with this team, there's a lot more competition. But the pitching staff is maybe the greatest example of the depth in numbers and the quality, power arms, guys that are more cerebral. They have a variety of different guys. They have twice as many left-handers this year when they get healthy as they did a year ago when they only had three left-handers the entire season, and they still made it work because all those guys were so good in Walsh, Heflin, and Crochet. Now they have some more options to where they're not as much stuck to just do one or two things in certain positions, so in certain situations. So I think the pitching staff has the potential to continue to be lights out going into conference play.
Tennessee has five players at the NFL Combine. Who do you think has the greatest opportunity to increase his draft value?
Well, I think all those guys, there's importance for them. Now, Daryl Taylor is not going to be able to do the workouts, he said. I think that hurts him. He's apparently going to have his own workout to where, you know, he's still recovering from that stress fracture. I think that's unfortunate. It maybe doesn't – I think because of the potential he has as a pass rusher and it's so coveted, I think that may not push him back in the draft, but I think he misses out on an opportunity to get people to really like him and see his quick twitch ability, his body, all those kind of things. So it's a missed opportunity for Taylor. I think Juwan Jennings, he was right there with Taylor in terms of second-day guys for the draft. I think Juwan Jennings, as long as he doesn't run a super slow time and he does well in the interviews, which I anticipate he has been doing so because those have already started and they'll continue even through tomorrow when the on-field workouts start for those wide receivers. I would put Jennings in there. You know, obviously we've talked about Callaway with a 40 time. Maybe he can get back into the draft range. At this point, I think it's Taylor and Jennings in terms of the most likely draft guys for Tennessee. And then, you know, Wood Anderson and Batuli and Callaway, you know, maybe with a good combine, they could move themselves in. But I'll stay with Jennings right now. Because that 40 time and those interviews are going to be, I think, so heavily scrutinized for him.
Vince, how devastating do you think the Vols' loss to Auburn was on Saturday?
Well, I don't see a path into the end of the tournament. And I know, you know, some still hanging out hope because of the teams that are in front of them, the quad ones and stuff. I just don't see it. I mean, their net isn't very good. They're, you know, 500 in conference play, and I don't think they can make up enough ground to even get in there, you know, short of an SEC tournament title. So I think, you know, they've had disappointing losses before, but I don't think anyone was quite like this one. The South Carolina game was another gut punch type of game, but that was different. This is a game that you were playing as well as you had in a long time, and then it went into operation shutdown in terms of your effectiveness after that. And you just haven't been able to function well without Vescovi on the floor. And I think if this team is going to make the NIT, they're going to figure that part of it out. They can't just be so reliant on Vescovi saving them. Yes, he's going to give some up on the defensive end, but you can't just rely on him and then not be able to function and turn the ball over too much after that. So to answer your question, Jimmy, I think it is devastating because now the NIT is in question for this team if they don't go on some sort of run late in the year, whether it's the regular season, the tournament, or who knows, maybe even both.
Vince Ferraro with us. He's at Lindsey Nelson Stadium and moments away from the start of his call this afternoon that you can follow on utsports.com and with the UT Game Day app. We'll get a little bit more time with Vince after this break as you listen to Sports Talk on 99.1 The Sports Animal.
Making average people feel more attractive since 1876. From the Budweiser studios of Cumulus Broadcasting, this is Sports Radio WNML.
Final segment, this first hour of Sports Talk, final segment with Vince Ferraro, who again getting ready to call Tennessee and UNC Asheville as he joins us from Lindsey Nelson Stadium. You can follow the action, utsports.com and UT's Game Day app. Vince, you take a quick look at the NBA, a lot expected out of the Philadelphia 76ers, and while Josh Richardson has been on the shelf for a good portion of the season, he's back healthy, but now that he's back in the lineup, there's no Ben Simmons.
Yeah, and there's been a lot of conversation that the 76ers are better with one or the other. And I think the numbers have really shown that. When Ben Simmons plays and Joel Embiid does not, Simmons plays better, and I think the Sixers have played well. When it's been the reverse, without Simmons, you see Joel Embiid playing well. Whether you put the blame on Brent Brown or the development of the players or whatever the reason you want to put for that, the numbers have shown that. And that without the shooting, without the consistent perimeter shooting, they haven't been able to make it work. And Richardson, although he's not a three-point marksman or anything, he's not J.J. Redick, he's a guy that can hit perimeter shots. So it just seems like they have been incomplete all season. And obviously disappointing, as they were expected to be one of the better teams in the Eastern Conference, because the talent is there from a name standpoint for sure.
We knew from when he was just taking meetings with ball clubs exactly the deep dives that Grant Williams was doing, whether it was meeting with the Magic and saying, well, you know, here's how their salary cap stands, and, you know, here's what they're looking to do, here's where I could fit in, and here's hoping that they sign these guys. But no surprise at all that he takes a moment to give a shout to one of the legends of the game in Bill Russell, simply for the fact that he had the opportunity.
Zero surprise. I mean, that is vintage Grant Williams, and there have been plenty of those times, whether it's finding and talking to Bill Russell, or when he went to a press conference and he had one sheets of guys with their resume so they'd get votes for the All-Star game, the three of his teammates, and he's sitting there campaigning with the media for his guys to get voted into the All-Star game. To, like you said, the roster breakdowns of teams, he's highly intelligent, and he's composed different, and he recognizes where they use the phrase, know where your feet are. I think Pruitt and Tennessee football has talked about that. He knows where he stands and knows the route that people took to get there. Such an impressive kid. Not surprised that he's have an early success, even if it's not in a starting role.
Jordan Bowden had a terrific game at Auburn. Did you get a chance to catch up with Bowden for your pregame player interview?
I did, and we'll run that tonight in the pregame, the ball in the spotlight. And you know, even though they were disappointed in the way that game finished, I did get a chance to watch them practice a little bit as well before I talked to Bowden. I didn't get the sense that they were shoulders drooped or, you know, why are we even bothering? I didn't get any of that. I saw the same intensity from the coaches. I saw the players just as dialed in, and I saw the optimism that, hey, we still have time. I mean, even he mentioned that they could be playing in March, and they know that with the strong finish, they can play. Now, that may mean the NIT as opposed to the NCAA tournament, but, if this team is going to do anything, they can't shut it down or be disappointed or let that one loss have their residual over them moving forward, starting tonight in a difficult place to play. It'll be well coached with Isaiah Joe back, who can really shoot from the outside and score, gives them Jones and Joe, and they're a different team with those two. But I didn't sense him being down or the team being down at all in preparing for that interview.
Vince, what can folks find these days at 991thesportsanimal.com?
You know, so much. Obviously, our podcasts, we really appreciate everyone that takes time to go find those podcasts. You can either find them in the audio tab on the website, or you go to any of the show pages, and there's the audio archive there. You can find it on the main page as well, where we have everything. And then blogs from Jimmy and Joel, myself and Josh and Eric. So a ton of content, a lot of national stuff there too. If you want Braves news, if you want Titans news, NFL news, there's so much there. So spend some time bouncing around on the website, 991thesportsanimal.com.
Vince, thanks so much for joining us. Have a great call, and we'll talk to you later.
Always enjoy it. Thanks for having me, guys. Have a good one.
All right, thank you. And that's Vince Ferrara again, utsports.com, the UT Game Day app, Tennessee, and UNC Asheville. And you can look forward to Vince's conversation with Bowden coming up. Let's see, Jordan Bowden, that'll be right around, pregame coverage starts at 8:10. Tune in then. Well, we hope you tune in before. We'll get a break. Hour number two of Sports Talk is next. It starts with comments from Tennessee coach Rick Barnes as we get you ready for the Vols at Arkansas as you listen to 99.1 The Sports Animal.